Those days when I was a teenager, I had refused to forgive her. I carried that anger with me. This woman shifted without me and went to another house. I came back for my vacation and me where I knew the home was, they said, your mom left last week.
This podcast is highly sponsored by Thrivees. Thrivees is the first mental health product line with affordable products you can use whenever you need something to lean on for emotional or mental support. Currently, we have coloring books of all ages and affirmation mugs. There are some new products coming up, so you need to make sure that you check out Thrivees on Instagram and Facebook so that you don't miss out on the updates. And yes, listener donations are also welcome. You can drop your donation on 0770338440. The number is registered in the names of NAVO Network. If you're not in Uganda, remember to add the country code +256 770338440.
Hey, welcome to Hashtag Window Guzichiwanuka. This is the number one African millennial podcast that sits at the intersection of mental health, self-discovery, and personal growth. If you're new here, welcome to your new virtual home. Be sure you hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening in so that you don't miss out on any of the future episodes. And if you're a returning listener, thank you so much for being the heartbeat of this show. This episode is a cocktail, or let's just say it's a heavy conversation, because it has layers of faith, rejection, maternal mental health, poverty, single motherhood, mothering with a mother wound, self-accountability, forgiveness, teenage mental health, emotional abuse, name it. I've had to cut it into two parts because, Kabahukia is that storyteller who is going to tell it all as is. So without further ado, let's dive into it. Kabahukia, welcome to Hashtag with NAVO Guzichiwanuka.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I feel joy.
You feel joy?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
I'm proud. I'm cheerful. I'm content. The word is content.
What is inspiring these emotions?
Recently, I have to say God has been good.
Yeah.
I think everything I have touched just has, like, it has just sprouted. And funny thing is that it surprises me because sometimes I do things and I'm like, I did that, went through. Anybody knows me, I have a fear of rejection. So when I get accepted into things, I even have this discussion I had with God some time ago, like 2 years, when I was just tired. And I told him, I'm done praying. I'm done asking. I'm done being angry at you. So this is what we're going to do. You're going to give me what you want to give me. And I'll thank you.
Is it?
Yeah.
I admire that.
But I am not coming to you because clearly I don't know what you want for me, but I know what I want for me. And because we are not aligning somewhere biblically, I am seeing your nose as a bad thing. So this is what we're going to do. You're going to do you. I'll do me.
Uh-huh.
We shall meet ourselves on Thanksgiving, and we stop meeting ourselves on how could you, why me, why God, when me.
That is interesting.
Yes.
Oh, trust me. There's a time when I told him, you know what? Don't meddle with my life. Don't enter.
Exactly.
Do not come back.
I don't know how many breakups I've had with that man up there. Like, if God could speak about toxic relationships, I am a very toxic wife. I. That days I tell him, do not talk to me. Do not, you know, the things where you're like on TikTok scrolling and then you feel like I'm like, nigga, I told you nothing relatable. I don't want. But recently, I don't know, I've just found myself in just bouts of worship because I am living my answered prayer. I'm in my era of answered prayers.
Era.
The things I prayed for years ago. You people
that we saw.
Patience in God is a virtue indeed. People, if someone had told me years ago that the now that I am in is where I was headed, I would have told them, blatant lies, please.
It's a lie.
I think Shakespeare, balderdash, never happening. Really. But now I look back and I'm the one telling like my kid brother that the things you're seeing me in, I used to tell God when, and I would cry every day. I'd be on pulpit, I was in choir, and I would cry. And people would think the spirit was moving. I swear.
Couldn't. What if it was?
Let me tell you.
Weren't you feeling the spirit?
I would feel him, but half of the time I would be on that pulpit. I'm like, but God.
Yeah.
But I reached a point where, you know, I was fired from choir.
Ah.
Yeah.
People get fired?
Oh, my friend.
What did you do?
My voice wasn't growing, apparently. And them as a choir, they were going to a certain place. And at that point, I was battling homelessness. I was battling quite a lot of things. I was battling domestic violence. I was battling quite a lot of things. And you know, you just come on pulpit to serve. But recently I learned that Christians run away from their problems by hiding in God. Eh? Mm-hmm. I used to be that Christian that would never face up to my problems. And when I was fired, I think that's when I reached my rock bottom. And I told him, you know what, God, fuck you. This is what we're going to do. I'm done serving. Yeah. I'm done. Because I think I've reached a place where I feel like I'm too righteous, maybe. And I feel like I'm deserving of your goodness and it's not coming. So, no. So, I don't know. I used to cry a lot on pulpit.
Yeah.
A lot. I remember there's that one young man, he's still my friend, who would come and say, I just like the way you just surrender to God.
Oh, wow.
You don't care who's looking. And that time he told me that my son had been kidnapped.
Bro.
So my tears were in, God, please, I am sorry. I didn't trust you. God, please bring my son back. I can't live without
him.
Was
the church aware of this?
No. It's just a few members that we knew. You know, when you are in Kampala suburban churches, people are believing God for cars. You are believing God for 100K for rent. Your kid that you are even fighting for, to in a school fees again, I'm so sorry. But you know those things where people are believing for things and you're like, oh, is it me with little faith? Why is it me? And I come from those kind of church backgrounds, and it took me some time to sit down, and I am so grateful to Kableta,
Pastor Kableta,
who taught me the journey, the race. Like, it's not unto the swift. And I remember it's like God knew that's what I needed to hear. Of like, it's not about how fast someone is getting there. It's about, you may be there quarreling with God, but when you are in your time, you are in your actual time. That point where you are in the desert and that is where you're supposed to be. But you are there crying about someone who has already reached Canaan as like, ah, okay. So somehow I started calming down, and the person I remember that was my leader in choir was believing God for Aspasio. Then there was
me.
Yeah. Then there was me who was walking to choir practice and believing God to give me tomorrow transportation to be there. You see the difference?
Yeah.
And then when she came, I remember my dad had just died. And just, I think 2 weeks, she's like, we can't continue with you anymore. Because, you know, you've been with us for so long, but you've not grown. It was like as if I had like been employed in a company, you know, like that company where you're not producing results, and you're causing them losses, so they have to fire you.
Wow.
And I'm like, I wasn't on the microphone. I was more of a backup. I'd never led. I was not even interested in leading. I just said, okay.
They were cutting some of the logistics, I guess.
No, it wasn't about logistics. It's just that they were going into band, kind of like being a singing group. And then there was me. I remember my ex calling me because he was part of like the leadership within, and he somehow was available in the meeting where it was decided to that I'm cut off. So he had rushed to come and tell me that
this is what's going to happen.
This is what is going to happen, but I'd not given him an ear because we're like on a breakup. So I was like, I'll see you on Friday if you want to talk to me, really. And The message came in on Wednesday. So I called him crying, saying, were you around when this meeting was being decided? He's like, actually, that's why I was calling you. I was like, and they're like, no, they asked them what will make them grow. And, you know, I was like, okay. And this person suggested that I try other ministries, ushering, media. Now, funny thing, that time I was studying media and I had a prophecy for media. And I'd, of course, testified about it, but had not given all the details because some details hadn't yet come to pass. And this person was sitting and I kept quiet. I just told her, you're not the one that called me. God knew that I was good at evangelism, I was good at ushering, but he told me to join the choir. He didn't just use one person, he used over three people to tell me, including myself, to join the choir. Now, for you to come and direct me to ministries where I was, and he told me to leave. Yeah, you're not my God. But since you said, it's okay, me and him shall have a discussion. And I will tell God, you're not seeing me on any pulpit ever. And you people, I was battling that time. Yeah. I was stuck in a stupid marriage that I'd forced myself into because...
But you know what? Let's hold on. We are almost into 10 minutes.
I'm sorry.
Of the episode. And people don't know who you are.
Oh, God.
You have come gassed up.
I'm Helen Kabahukia.
Oh, it's Kabahukia, not yeah. Kabahucha.
No. It's Kabahukia Mamtoro. So the Bachiga, Banyankwede, Baganda, usually cha. But the Batori is a kia.
Kia.
Yes.
Does it have a specific meaning?
Yes.
What is it?
It means activation. I bring back to life. So in our culture, if there was a dead anthill and the queen was not productive and everything, the one they take to perform certain
rites.
Yes. And that anthill is expected. I will bring it back to life.
What if it doesn't?
Have never practiced it. My dad just told me I am living up to my name because I have failed to bring sadness wherever I go. Like, for some reason, I'm too hyper, I'm too talkative, I am too jolly, even when I am sad. Trust me, I'll put my sadness aside and we laugh. And that's one thing my dad said, like, Mwanawange, you have lived up to your name. Mm-hmm, I did not name you wrongly. Mm-hmm. So, away from that, I'm a mother of one, an amazing 10-year-old boy. That's amazing. Amazing has a lot of components within there. but he's an amazing boy. I'm a journalist. I'm a believer in God. Mm. I love poetry. I love singing. I love music. And I love life.
You love life.
Yes, I think there's a time I didn't love it, but now I'm on a board and I'm saying, Father Lord, may this not be my last day.
Give me more. Give me 100.
And those days, my dear Lord, I didn't care. I went to Meda. Over here driving me, how I'd even ask the border drive speed.
Let us draw back to those days.
Yeah.
What happened?
I come from a family of about six kids. Between my mom has six, my dad has, I think, also six. Combined, we are two, me and my little brother. But my father loved me so much that he decided I should have a better life. So he sent me to Kampala to live with his sister. And honestly, the sister loved me so much. Till her death, she did love me. We had, of course, our problems. You know, you become a teenager somewhere. Mm. And then, of course, she had a love life and the men should get the note like baggage. Trust me, I know that I've grown up, I've actually understood.
So you were the baggage?
Yes, I was the baggage and I was her.
A niece?
Yes, she would never let me go. She would introduce me as the daughter.
Oh.
So when they would find out that I'm actually not the daughter, they would be like, why don't you send her back to her father? And it's like, no, this is my daughter. This is my firstborn. And those days I really used to, there's a time she had to choose her husband over me. And it didn't make sense to me. How dare he? You understand? But now that I've grown up, I've understood the demands of men. And at a certain point in time, the age you reach And then you feel like society is looking at you. So you're like, nah, you know what? She's not even my child. Like, I have actually learned to forgive her. Those days when I was a teenager, I had refused to forgive her. I carried that anger with me. This woman shifted without me and went to another house. I came back for my vacation, and me, where I knew the home was, they said, your mom left last week. What? So I had to go back to school and pretend as if I didn't see it. So I left with all that anger. And actually, by the time she died, I'd never told her this. So I grew up with so much anger. So when she dies, of course, you know, when people die, we're sitting in a meeting and then you're divided up again. So, of course, my uncles take responsibility for me because I have to finish my senior 5. I have to finish my senior 6 and then go on to campus. And I think things just took worse. So I think I had mental health challenges that my first boyfriend noticed, and he would always like talk to me. And then
that was you as a teenager.
Yes, that was me as a teenager.
I think, I don't know if this is a time where we have to also explore that part, because I think as a society we've been dismissive of the fact that children struggle mentally.
They do.
So you could, I don't know if you have come to a moment of reflection to come to full awareness of what it is that might have been weighing you down as a teenager.
From the age of like 12 to the age of like 23.
11 years.
I struggled with depression. I struggled with rejection. Like, I struggled with that fear because I grew up being insulted how stupid I am. And they're like, olimodoma, olimodoma. Like, every time, because you don't perform. And parents don't realize how words play into children's minds. I remember the person that saved me from that inferiority complex of, and I'm very competitive till date because of that. Because I always had to prove to my mother that I'm actually intelligent.
To your mother?
Yes, to my foster mom, my aunt. I had to prove that I was actually intelligent, that I was a worthwhile investment. You understand? Because she'll be like, I'm going to ship you back to the village. And of course, growing up in Kampala, you think village life is bad.
Right.
You understand? I don't know the love of my mother. She never raised me. You get? I don't even have a relationship with my mother. She's there, and I always forget to actually clarify for people that, oh, by the way, my biological mother is alive. And of course, growing up, I always had that fear. So I always had, I'm very competitive, very, and it's something that I had to reflect on and ask myself, but when did I get competitive?
What is it?
Naturally, I don't actually like being in competitions, but then I realized I am competitive in places where people need, I need to prove that I'm actually smart. And it was because of that. And I struggled. I wanted my mom to see me. You know, as a teenager, people think you are trying to run away from, no, you want to be seen. You want to be heard. But then this woman was in her 30s. Now that I grow up, I understand she was in her 30s. She was unmarried. She had no child. She had focused on taking care of her brothers and her brother's kids. And she had no life of her own. So, of course, frustration had to go to the people around her. And, of course, it doesn't really treat you well. And I remember being at school. I'd prefer being at school instead of going home because I felt like home was just too much. She even one day sat me down and told me, why don't you like coming back home? Has this man maybe touched you wrongly or something? Because she was very protective. And I just told her, he mistreats me and I do not like it. He calls me a parasite. He calls me a tick. He calls me a blood-sucking animal.
Was he doing that though?
Yes, he was calling me all those things. And not just me, but my other cousins that were around. And this man would make us feel so small, like too small, like you'd want. So the one time I went to the village and I realized the relationship my siblings had with my mom, she didn't have a lot. She was in like a small room, but they were so happy. She would wake up in the morning asking, what should we eat? This woman was broke. But she was asking her kids, what should we eat? I'm like, and the kids are like, oh, beans over today, we mix in with maize. Wait, what? Like, if you asked me, I was going to say chicken. and I noticed the language my siblings were using. Like, Wanange, mommy is tough, but Wanange, that woman loves us. And I didn't have that feeling. So, of course, again, I felt rejected because I was like, why didn't she love me? Why didn't she fight for me? Why am I in Kampala struggling when she's here?
So that was like a visit you had gone to visit her?
Yes. That's around, in P3, I never really understood it, but it was around senior 2. And you know, 14 is it's a bad age. Like, I don't look forward to 14 on my son. I don't look forward. Because you have to put all the feelings into play. And I was looking at this woman and I was just looking at her with this whole disdain of like, how could you? Why would you give me up and stay with my siblings and actually take care of them? Like, it's not for the lack of space. So when they had told me, and then growing up, I started understanding why village life is considered bad. I was seeing my siblings, they lacked nothing. Of course, school fees was beans and maize, but they still lacked nothing. And it just would blow my mind. And I started questioning her on that. And like, and she's like, your father made a decision. I could not say no to it. And me, I couldn't be angry at my dad because I was seeing my dad all the time. My dad was my favorite parent. And I was like, no, you could have fought for me. But again, and then what worsened, one day they asked her, how many kids do you have? And she skipped me.
No.
Yeah.
No.
She mentioned all of them without me. And I was around, but I was not.
Like, she was naming them?
Yes, she named them. And she skipped me. And I was in the house. Like, I wasn't in the compound, I was in the house. Then the lady asked her, like, Kandu mana wa Kampala, what about your daughter in Kampala? That one who looks like you. Bah, Helen. That one is not mine. So you can understand you're 14 and hearing that. And you have just seen this woman escape death. And in that moment, you had prayed for her and said, God, if you can only save her. And she has now forgotten. You understand? I had just seen this woman come back from the brinks of death. They had literally sent me to the village to say goodbye to her. Your mother is going to die. And meanwhile, that's how I was told. Your mother is going to die. Go and say goodbye to her. And me, who didn't have a relationship with her, I was like, ah. So when I saw her, and honestly, she was dying, I was strong. That's where I think my strength started building. I had to be strong. I had to hold her and tell her it's going to be okay. But everybody was like, she called for every of her kid. So I go behind the house. I pray and say, God, please save her. Because again, I'd never interfaced with death. I hear people crying and I'm like, oh, she's gone. And then by the time I come back, they're like, oh, she has come back to life. Like, she died for like a minute. I was like, okay. And then that's how every other thing now transpires. She's recovering and then she has forgotten my name. Why? And then...
And she goes on to say that she not
has... And of course she comes back with all this love for her kids because, you know, she was going. So she's like, oh, what do we eat? What should we cook? You know, that kind of thing. And I'm thinking, so you people enjoy this and I'm in Kampala sleeping on Samka mattress they bought for me in P3. You people are enjoying this while I'm in Kampala being told how I'm eating food that it does not belong, how I'm a tick. Woman. So I remember HIV was too much in the village and every man was looking out for my mother's daughters to infect them.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. So my mom started giving birth to us at 14. I was given birth to at 16. So by the time I was 14, you can imagine what my mother's age was. She was just 30. You understand? She was still a very young woman. She was 30. Yeah, she was 30. And being a young woman, she was not an easy woman. When they separated my dad, there was a season she dated quite a lot. Now, the young men in that space said...
Was it some kind of revenge that they want?
It was.
On her?
Yes, it was. And nobody could trace where she fell sick from. So everybody assumed she's the one that infected. So it was like...
Oh my goodness.
Yes. So my dad was very protective. Was like, men have sat down and devised plans on raping you. And then there was me, the free spirit.
Moving. Still at 14. This is knowledge that comes to you at that age?
Yes. And I'm there swinging my skirts very carefree. And funny thing is that with me is that when things are too overwhelming, I push them down. Like, I just, they disappear in my mind. Me, I just go with what is moving. My sister called me and was like, hey, this friend of yours used to give you music when you'd come here when you're young. He's calling you. I'm like, oh, okay. My dad finds me there. He's aware that this man was intending to rape me. I'm not aware. Me, I think this is Gerard, the guy at the shop. You get? He finds me and for the first time, he beats me.
Your father?
Yes. And I'm looking at him. I'm like, I can't have friends anymore. I can't work with my own stepsister anymore. He's like, I'm trying to protect you. So I run to mom. saying, can you believe the bit in me because ABCD? Yeah, let him add you. He has overspoiled you. I'm like, okay. I packed my clothes and went to my grandmother. They never saw me again because in my head, she of course came and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, you blocked how I handled things and whatever. And I'm like, but that's what you always do. You hurt me, then you apologize. But then the hurt is done. And I was a very vocal child. Being that I was over being bullied at home, I had this whole other persona that would come out.
You were ready to fight.
Yes, I was till dead. Come for me and see. Like, I have this whole thing of like, you have grown up fighting. So I really don't care about you. So you come back, and again, you come back to Kampala. There are those favorite cousins. They're going to Giza. They're going to Trinity College in Abingo. And then there's you going to Chweka High School. Chweka High School by then was known for being a Bufumbo college. Teachers would sleep with students. Students would sleep with each other. It was normal. So asking myself a question.
There are no rules and regulations in the school?
They were there, but this is a school that had budankes like four times a week. Yeah, and the budankes were...
Four times a week?
So you have
when
like
are you
a
studying?
Friday, you'd have a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So what you do that there were so many clubs, every club would slot its own day.
Oh, there were clubs in school yes. that had parties.
Yes. So everybody is slotting a day and all of them end with kadanke in the main hall. And guess what? The ones on Saturday, we have external people coming in.
Why are they allowing
at Chweka High, Bambi has just developed those days. It was a school where every failure, if you didn't pass P7 well, that's where you'd go.
Oh, yeah?
School fees was 90K. What are you talking about?
Which year is this, Helen?
That's 2007.
90,000?
Yes. 90,000 right now should be like in 300K. But by then, that was very little money. Like compared to where Chambogo was paying... others, Trinity College, Giza, where I'd have preferred to be. I was in there.
Kids were carrying that as pocket money, my dear.
Exactly.
Even no. more than that.
Exactly. But for me, that was school fees.
Right. That's why I'm like, what?
And so my mom had taken, my foster mom was taking care of Justin, our maid. And she had been with us for so long. And I loved her so much. So she chose that school.
Justin chose the school?
Yes, Justin chose the school because, again, for her, she was older. She was already in her 20s. So she needed a school where she won't feel out of place because people were already that age in school.
Mm.
So my mom says, sits down with a boyfriend and they decide I should go to the same school. I'm like, okay. I reach the school, I cry. I'm not used to it because all my OBs and OGs I ate there in Uganda matters. Kungas, Nafsusa, Giza. So every time I'll be leaving school, I'd be in like Leia because I didn't want people to know that I was from Chweka High. But because again, when you're in an environment, you get adapted to it. Oh my God, by the time I left the school, I didn't want to leave because I was on top of the world. I was a celebrity. I was dating a celebrity. Like a popular kid in school, I was dating that one. Like I was untouchable, teachers love. And the worst thing is that I was untouchable because I was brilliant. Now, what was funny is that at home I wasn't considered brilliant, but at school,
What causes this contrast?
The contrast was my mom expected me to like distinctions, like perform like as if I was at Giza. And yet I was at Chweka High where I taught myself literature from senior 2 to senior 4. My teacher remembered she had a literature student the night before I did the exam. I have a credit 4 in literature senior 4.
Mm.
And I always tell people I taught myself that subject. I taught myself the techniques of literature, how to write, how to do. I wasn't taught. I was the only literature student in the entire school. The teacher remembered me at night. They're like, oh, by the way, unayo mwana, unayo pepe ncha. She's like, mwana, all the senior 4 kids dropped out. But Helen, to drop out on literature, have you met her? She has read the entire library. That's when she calls me and she's educating me and I'm looking at her like this. And I'm telling her, those things are passing me through me, I already read them. She's like, who taught you? I'm like, myself. So now you see the kind of like image I'd built for myself at school. I'm self-taught, I'll push myself, I'll do everything. At home, mommy's expecting a D1. From where? From a teacher who didn't come to class? or from me who said they were studying under the tree. Because that's where our classes were. The first time my mom came to the school, that's when she started crying. She's like, oh my God, which school is this? I enrolled to the school and she didn't even know the school I was enrolled to. She found out about the school in senior three. She used to send me with the maid. So when I enter boarding in senior three, that's when she finds out about the school. She tries to change it. I tell her to where? Me, I'm already accustomed. You're not taking... Who are you removing me, Helen? From the school where I could hide all my mental health issues? Be happy. Now, first of all, as a popular kid, everybody brought me eats from day. So around that time, she also stops bringing me stuff, grab at school. Like, it's okay. Why? I had people who would bring me grub. Like, it didn't matter. I Choli Quarter was like our backyard. We would escape just to go to be in a Choli Quarter.
What is a Choli Quarter?
It is the internally displaced camp for people that escaped the war.
The LRA war?
Yes.
So in Chireka?
Yes.
So is it still there?
Yes. People still live there. All my friends are still there. And I used to love it because those people would be so happy. And meanwhile, everybody wanted my life because when they would come home, they would see tiles, they would see DSTV, they would see a Sony TV. You know, Sony is like the current Hisense. Sony was the thing. And, you know, they would see a pass. And those are rare things in the house, a full set of chairs. And me, I'm finding like, yeah, we are literally just mediocre class. I've seen richer people within the family, but everybody wanted my life. I was in a gate, I was in pavers, you know, I could ride a bike, I could do all these things. And me, I wanted their life. And me, I just couldn't. I remember I tried committing suicide thrice between the age of 14 and 16. There's a time I swallowed medicine at school because I was tired, I was exhausted.
Where could you have, allow me to say, and I'm asking this question because, you know, senior two, I wonder where that girl is. She tried to die by suicide and that was by overdose.
Yeah, that's usually the option you have.
And I'll kid you not, at that age, you don't hear much about of it. Such things.
Yeah.
And even when it happened, we just know she was carried out of the dormitory, probably taken to hospital. And I don't think I saw her again. I don't think she came back to school.
See, at that age, when things are not going your way, you prefer to die. Because you have a lot of pain that nobody seems to understand. Because every time you speak out your pain, everyone is comparing their pain to your pain and trying to make your pain look smaller so you shut up. And then you feel like everybody's putting you on a certain pedestal that you are not. You're dealing with quite a lot, but no one is understanding because you're either being a crybaby or a spoiled brat, right? So for me, I was tired. I didn't want to go home. I felt like I was not wanted anywhere. I felt like every time I touched something, it would break, like at home, like it's like there was a crime I was committing every time I turned. Like I sit in one place, it's a crime. I get out, it's a crime. I eat a certain way, it's a crime. I was so scared. So I remember I have terrible cramp pains, terrible. So those ones came from childhood. So I would always go, so the nurse would always give me medicine. So there's always that balance that you keep. So I remember that one day, I do not remember what crime had been committed at school, but somehow I was in the middle of it and I don't know how I was in the middle of that crime. And I remember I go, like I get an attack. It's something that used to pierce me every time I'd breathe when I'd be panicking. So I go, they take me to hospital and my mom comes and says, now you see this one. So every time she just feels like, you know, she can just fall sick and just to get attention. I was like, okay, so if the problem is that I'm getting attention, let me just stop getting attention. So I go back to school and swallow that meds. But the thing is that my best friend wakes me up and I'm awake. And I look at her like this. And me and her first, she was already panicking because she saw. So she comes panicking and I'm like, Gwachichi. And then that's when I realized, wait, I'm alive. Why?
Yeah.
I leave that one. So she finds out about it. She tells me, Helen, don't do that again. So of course she takes me to her mom. Her mom loves me so much. It's like she literally was compensating for the love. She herself, she became so protective of me. And every time you'd come for me, she'd be like, you, not my friend.
Mm.
In senior three, I was in the top three at school. I take the report back at home, expecting, you know, finally. And mommy's happy. Like, oh.
Okay.
The jack of a boyfriend comes and says, Vinovich, the person saying Vinovich has their child at Uganda Matters, and they are comparing their child to me. And I looked at the man, and before he knew it, I was being rained slaps. I was like, okay. So I remember going and sitting outside and saying, you know what, nobody cares whether I perform well, whether I try, whether I do what. Meanwhile, to even be in top three that time, there's a senior six student that really, really liked me. So they went and changed my paper that had failed. So I said, even when people like come in to help me, it's still the same thing. So I get a knife. So as I'm like, you know those things when you are there and you're like, they didn't even know me. Because you're 15, so you're like, you still also consider pain. As people don't even think that, realize that people actually who commit suicide also consider the fact of pain. That's why people who commit suicide usually try to look for the most painless, what they think is painless. And I'm there. So the maid knew my mind so well. And my best friend had told her about the episode. So she came, said, Helen, give me that knife. I'm like, no, I'm just with it. So it's like, you're just with it in darkness. Then meanwhile, I'm just like, the knife is like, you know this thing where I dilly-dallying on it like this. So I'd seen it in movies, like if you cut here and
you
here.
Had seen in movies?
Yes, like.
Because that's where my question was coming from.
Like, you see, like if I cut here and cut here, I'll bleed out very quickly.
What movies were you watching?
That's what movies raised me. I wasn't raised, I was raised by movies. No one ever sat me down to tell me sex education or nothing.
I want to do some comparison,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I think I was asking you for which year it was.
Mm.
Senior three, which year is that?
Senior three, that's 2008.
Okay, same. Mm. But at that time, I don't know what kind of movies we were watching.
I remember we were watching soap operas.
Yes, there were soap operas, and those kinds of details weren't there, were they?
If you watched La Lola, there would always be those episodes of hanging.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Those episodes of people, because they're jilted, they cut themselves and bleed out in the bathtub.
Is it?
Yes. And then I remember... There's a movie I love till death. That movie is the one that cures my mental health issues every time I get to that point. A Walk to Remember, if you watched that movie.
Okay, we were in school and people used to narrate movies. Yeah. So
A Walk to Remember, Mandy Moore, and I think Shane West. I never forget the movie. Remember, I was sitting and my mother was insulting the me blue black. So to... You know when you insult someone and they are just dead to it? I died to it and just concentrated on the movie. So at first I was crying because of what she was insulting me with, telling me how, I think in that time the insult that broke me was my brother had died and I did not know about it. And she said, you are here, you're poor, you don't appreciate the help that you're being given, even if I threw you to the village right now. You just be impregnated in a few. Your father is broke us. He has to depend on the rest of us. And then you are here wasting my money, my hard earned money. Yet your father, you think if I took you back to your father, he would help you. The one who could not even take care of his own kid, that he even had to die. First of all, the kid they're talking about, I do not know them. I didn't know that my stepmother was pregnant and had a child. I don't even know whether it was just my mother. I don't know who. So I broke down because I'm thinking, oh my God, my dad. So I started crying. So that's when A Walk to Remember starts. When it starts, I watch the movie. So I phase out. When I phase out, it reaches the scenes where people are crying. And me, I start crying because really the movie, you know, is making me emotional. And the entire time till death, people say that is the part where my mom ever made me cry. No. I was crying because of the movie. If you ask me what she said after that, I don't remember anything after that. From the moment the movie began till end, that was like an hour and a half, I didn't hear shit. at all. And that's the time I learned that technique. So every time she would like insult me, I would just think about something that, whatever will make me feel a little bit distracted. But then what I didn't realize, it came catching up with me at an older age. So I get pregnant by 20, because she dies when I'm 17. I start working when I'm 18, because again, the people they left me in charge with, everybody was doing their own life. And then by 19, I'm in my like first official relationship, but it's, you know, this relationship, the transition from best friend to friend.
To boyfriend.
So I'm not there. So I find this boy that gives me butterflies, you know, we're kissing in the middle of Freedom Square and, you know.
This one, Freedom Square. You're serious?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That one. And then, you know, those, me when I feel like I've never experienced, no one has ever taught me sex education. I do not know. Everything I know about sex, everything I know about, is from movies, right? So I'm like, I of course, I'm relating the feelings I'm feeling to what I have watched in movies.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I'm feeling like this is the right feeling.
This is it.
The other that I'm feeling with my bestie is just my bestie. You get? This is the feeling, the butterflies that we're talking about in the movie. The part where everything, you know, just makes you shiver. I'm like, The very first time, I became pregnant, like fast. I didn't need the second time. And I don't find out till I'm 4 months pregnant.
Ooh.
Yeah. So when that happens, before that, my head of department, before I even realized I was pregnant, I think I was 19, my head of department realized I detach very easily. I'm going to say I'm the type that you will piss off and I'll forgive you today, tomorrow, the other day. But if I say I'm done with you, you'll cease existing in my life, even if I'm looking at you. You will cease.
That's my toxic trait.
I don't hate you. I don't even spend time wishing ill on you. It's just that you don't exist, but I will forgive you consistently. But the day I say, now I'm done. And my boss notices it. My head of department notices it because he did psychology and all that stuff. He was just in marketing.
So, you're saying your boss?
Yes, my head of department.
When you were saying head of department, I was thinking school.
No. Head of department work at 19. I started working when I was 18.
That is like your vacation job?
My vacation. So my vacation, I start working. I go to Makere. That's where I meet my, me and my bestie transition to this whole thingy. And then next thing is, they're saying there's no fees for you. So I'm like, okay, let me sit. So I concentrate really more on working. Have you ever reached where bad news is just too much for you? And for some reason, every time you do the wrong thing, it is seen. But the day I clean, wash, you know, make sure, like my cousin sister would come and do like, it's not clean. But nobody bothered cleaning. I just cleaned. I'm not your maid, right? And it's this thing where every time I would go to school, I'd be given 50K. For a pad, basic needs, grab, transport, and transport, grab, basically the things that are needed at school.
I mean, 50,000 had to cater for all the requirements?
Every requirement. So you'd figure out your life. And my school, my HSE school, was Chavakade. So I'd have to
move. That's St. Cyprian?
Yes. So I'd have to move from Kampala to Mukono, to my auntie's place. My auntie would maybe look for like a quart of sugar, you know, survive.
That's a different aunt.
Yes, like survive. That one, my actual aunt had now died. The one who was taking care of me. So my uncles were the ones in charge and they will give you just 50K. Figure out your life. Your transport is there. The basics needs they need at school are there. Just wait for our fees. And I remember my auntie used to tell me, just be appreciative of that.
Mm.
I said I've done fees. I'm like, okay. And I kept quiet. And that's actually played into my relationships. I settle for less. Like, sometimes I reflect on some of my
relationships. I appreciate what has been given.
I'm like, sometimes I reflect on my relationship. I'm like, but how did I get here? I usually have higher standards. When did I start? And then I realized it's simply because I was groomed to settle, to like, be okay with what you have. see the good in the bad, my aunt would be like, Kasta, they are paying fees. Kasta, you have transport. And then it's okay, you are jago jago, you'll figure out life.
You will, ooh.
Yes. And indeed, I figured it out. I'd go to the HM and God rest his soul. Kalodi would give me money all the time. I tell him I'm hungry and I don't want to eat pushu. It's like, Helen, but how did you perform in this? like this, and I always knew he would be glad with my results. And he always had those shopping sprees he would do. So somehow I'd always jump on them, and I knew his timing is like 10 minutes. Choskaecho was say, me, I knew aisles, biscuits, streets. And the first person on the counter is one he pays for all of it. Then everybody else starts to downsize. So my job would always to pull out the quick ones, go to the counter, get paid for. So somehow, of course, I figured out life. And of course, I made friends with people who had like money. Me, I offered brains. They offered me. And me, I just discuss for you. That is easy. But then when I finished my senior sex, now campus, and they're telling me they don't have money, I was like, you know what? Let me just take myself to school. So I remember applying for a very high-end job. That is, so I leave Makere now. I drop out from Kamas. I'm like, no, I'll just go and do marketing directly. After all, it's what I'm doing as a business. So my boss notices I'm too aggressive. That is number one. Me, but you are my HOD and you're trying to step on me. Why? So it is this thing where I would carry my inability to fight back at home and just be like, I'm not going to be squeezed from home and be squeezed outside. Outside, I'll show you. Inside, I still need a roof over my head. You, what's the worst you can do? So my boss being a psychologist, he notices what he says, like, Helen, there's this program, it's a certificate program. Since you're not studying, come, we can do it. Like, for how long is it? Like, for 3 months. Only for me to get there, and it is this group therapy.
Wow.
But they, of course, lie to us. It's certificate.
Is it?
Yes, you are studying. We are going to give you a certificate at the end.
Are you serious?
Kumbe, there was a white man. Where was this? He was called Dr. Smith. I don't know whether he's still alive. He was a very old man. I think he was doing maybe research or something. And he asked people to bring people that they know that they need therapy.
Wow.
To make group therapy. And it's after I'm like talking to the girl, the women that are there, the men. And I realized everybody's dealing with a lot of baggage in here. Ooh. So they'll tell you, write down your thoughts. They're going to grade it. And of course you, Helen, grade it?
Yeah.
It has to be, I have to be in 80s, my friend. So I'll give you, did you say Max? Don't worry.
Sounds like a good plan though.
It was a good plan.
For schools.
Let me tell you, it was a good plan. So I was like, I would write down, kumbe. I'm literally being studied. So of course the guy would be like, oh, I like Helen's authenticity and everything. She has 85%. I'm like, let me see who beats that. It's now that I've grown that I start reflecting on those things. Now, when we're done with the course after 3 months, because we'd meet twice a week, and my boss would drive me there himself, drop me there, move around and come and pick me after. He would actually do sales on my behalf that day.
Where is he now?
Now he's in politics. We're friends. Of course, we talk. And he always follows up on me. But actually, he's the one who got me the scholarship at Cavendish. He just said, I know you love school. We have to figure out school. Now, when I go, I come. And then, of course, I think they're discussing as doctors. So he starts, you know, doing a whole mentorship, telling me you should go to church. And meanwhile, I was not a very good church person. Then, so when the program is done, Dr. Smith, and that's when I realized I had a mental health problem. Dr. Smith starts saying, Helen, I need to see you. You need to come to Mulago to anatomy. I feel like we can expand on your certificate. So the Ugandan guy didn't know what was going through, what was going on, one of his people that would walk around him. So he's like, you know, Helen, you should come to Dr. Smith. He will really help you. I'm like, help me with what? Like, no, dealing with a lot. You know, he's the one who helps me with therapy. So I go, and of course I dodge it until I realize I was better when I was in therapy.
For the 3 months course.
I was happy. I was peaceful. Now that I'm not in therapy, it's getting bad. Mm-hmm. So I check myself in. I take myself there. Of course, I'm talking to him and I'm bawling my eyes out because I knew he's the only person now. I was tired of telling people my story because everybody within the family was using my story against me. I tell someone so-and-so has done this to me, and then before you know it, it's a conversation. Before you know it, they'll tell you, don't do that. She'll go and talk about you.
Wow.
So I didn't feel safe anymore. Like, who do I trust with my information? So I went and bawled it out to him because my head, like, this is safe. This is, he does not know any part of my family. And I would feel better. So I got the energy to leave home. Because he reached a point and told me, Helen, you're going to have to make a decision. I didn't realize he was saying those things from a white perspective. Whites leave early at home. He said, Helen, you're going to have to reach a point in life. And because he asked me, do you do all these things by yourself? I'm like, yeah. He's like, then you're going to have to reach a point in life and make a decision to stay or leave. And eject yourself from that situation. I was like, you don't have to say it twice. I found my way out, but of course I was dragged back in. And then my sister has a wedding. Being the honest mess, they bring those memory lanes. I know nothing about them. Editors do their job, and it is a mess, an actual mess. And I look at my sister. She's the only one that can defend me, but she has decided to milk the situation and play victim. Like, I didn't know that she was going to do that, but yet she was aware of everything. And I'm looking at her, I'm like, defend me. And she's not. And
wait, what happened? She had a wedding and
she had a wedding, so we had to record a memory lane. So, of course, they're asking us questions. For me, I think they're going to come out the way they are. Editors went and did. Now that I'm an editor, I realize people can frame you to say things. And because people don't know the process of editing, for them, they assumed I said it like that, right? They don't know that they were just clips of me, like punchlines that were picked out and just made into that
show.
Meanwhile, my sister knows the truth. But she needs to play victim because at the end of the day, she was always the center of attention. So I'm like, please defend me. Say the truth. Tell the people the truth. So my uncles sit me down. And they're like, so Louisa decided that you should not be here anymore. In my head, I'm like, so the person who's married now can decide on whether or not I live in this house. I said, okay. They're like, also, we don't appreciate what you've been going around telling people about how we treat you. I'm like, so I'm not allowed to vent. Then, like, did you tell Louisa that if we ever, that we should, we should pray that we live long enough because if we die, you'll touch our kids. And I'm like, oh yeah, I said that. I didn't have time to deny myself. I said, yes, I'll torture them. I'll make them feel every tear you made me feel, probably worse. And they're like, Helen, you were not like this. You used to be a sweet girl. I'm like, sweet. I read each one of them. In my head, I said, this is a point where a doctor said I should eject myself from this situation. But he also said that maybe it has to come to a time where I tell them the truth and tell them how they're making me feel. I read all of them, went into the room, packed my bags. The next day, they didn't find me there. They called my dad to come and talk to me. And I told my dad, I am going to suffer. I'll be in the gutters, but let me be in the gutters very well knowing that I put myself there.
Is that the point of homelessness?
That is not yet the point of homelessness. That point, I even have a job. I'm not even aware I'm pregnant.
The time when you packed, you were already pregnant?
Yes, and I didn't know. So I go to hostel. I'd enrolled for MOOBs, marketing. So they're calling my dad to tell him to make me change my mind. I go back to Kamas, to Makere. And I'm saying that's a 4 years course. It's Kamas external. Very not me. I had better marks than that. So daddy goes to them and says, she has made a decision and she's not coming back. Because me, I told my dad, daddy told me to be patient till I was 18. I got to 18. It's like, no, I just need to be more patient till 21. I'm like, I'm not doing that anymore. I'll kill somebody. Do you want me to kill your brothers? He's like, I tell you, you're capable. I'm like, exactly. So he left me, told me, but don't ever say that I didn't warn you. I'm like, no, don't worry. Come, I'm pregnant. I also don't know. Clock's 4 months. I'm yellowish. I'm selling and I'm at Marie Stops. And the lady tells me, I'm going to buy your MiFi, but can you test for pregnancy? I'm like, I'm not pregnant.
I'm going to buy you?
The MiFi I was selling to her. I was trying to sell to them internet. She's like, I'll buy your internet, but test for me your pregnancy. Like, you're only losing 5K. Just test. I test and then I'm told I'm pregnant. I'm like, hell no. I just had my periods like last week. They're like, how were they? I explained to them, they're like, Helen, I think you may even be like longer. When did you started experiencing this? I'm like, 3 going to 4. Like, this is the 4th month. They're like, Ellen, I think you're 4 months pregnant. So I go and do a scan. Of course, I go and tell my butterfly boyfriend. And it's like, ewa fede tuzala.
You're kidding. You serious?
Eh? He told me. At first, he pretended to be okay. And it's like, yeah, don't even abort the child, whatever. Kumbe, this man was sitting on me with a maid of a shop where he would go and buy me soda and cake and whatever. Let me tell you, people. And so if we figure out that girl is pregnant too. Same period of time. And he comes and tells me, I don't want to kill your future. You should abort. It's like, and I'm like, but you already said we should keep the baby. It's been like, we're already entering the 5th month. What are you talking about? So of course it starts being funny. And then that's when you hear statements, tuzala, and then he's making them as a joke, like with his guy friends in the room. Kind of like, what did mbona lilibutorange? Chokafe wafenzi zala. All the women I've slept with, how come none of them has come pregnant? Nope. Meanwhile, I'm not aware of the other girl.
Was he aware?
He was aware and he was keeping it from me. And that's the reason why he was asking me to abort. And
so that one stays?
Yeah. And I was the one that was chosen because apparently I have a better future. And I kept on wondering, so what do you mean I have a chance at a better future? I'm already earning 2.1 million. What are you talking about? Because I was 20 and I was earning. Because that's what I was using to pay my fees. Until this girl comes to my door, I look at her from head to toe. I ask her, who are you? I've never exercised calmness. That's why I think for me, infidelity would not be the reason why I get out of marriage. Because that day I exercised calmness, I was so shocked. I looked at this chick, she came. It's like Mambi that picked her up from home, like that side of North, brought her. She didn't even know English. And I was busy asking her, how were you communicating? You can barely hold a sentence in English. How are you communicating? Like, no, he would come to the shop, ask me for bread, soda. He told me he likes me, he loves me. And I was like, this manipulative bastard. And then I noticed a pattern. So women started cropping up. The ones he had made to abort, there were too many. And I was far in. I had rented a house. I had bought furniture at 20. After I did all these things, this man said, we can't be together. We can't live together in the same house because of this girl. They're going to arrest me. Do you want me to tell me who's in love? You know, it's a wrong patch. Again, my childhood has taught me to settle for less, to look for the light in the darkness. Like, after all, he's here and he loves me and it's me he loves. This man got
He's even caring about your future.
Mm-hmm. And then at work, they sell us bags. I get those bags. He tells me I want to give this back to my mom. Tell me why I'm crossing the street and I see his ex with that same bag. Uh-huh. And this ex, that's one of the reasons we'd have a lot of fights, because I kept on saying, like, you still have feelings for this girl. And again,
first let us bridge. Oh, I barely knew much about life at 20.
Mm-hmm. So, meanwhile, this is like your first love in love relationship, right?
Why is it complex like that?
Yeah,
like,
and so I know nothing. I can remember no one taught me shit, so I'm just going with the way things are. I don't know who to run to when I'm pregnant, because now who do I run to? I keep quiet and bear that brunt alone. And I remember women kept on popping up and popping up. I just said, you know what? Because I kept on going to the hospital and they kept on saying, Helen, stop sleeping with this man. I'm like, why? He's my boyfriend. They're like, you realize your infections never end.
Wow.
So they're finding infection after infection until I got Vegeta Binanansi.
What's that?
Where you, on your vagina, uh-huh, extra things grow on it. And it's not gonorrhea, it's not syphilis. I don't know what it was, but all I know is...
And those what they call warts?
Warts. And
I also have to Google them to be sure how they look like.
And my...
Isn't that gonorrhea?
I do not know. By that time, for them, they were warts, but they were not that. Because by the time when I got to hospital, my doctors were in. My gyna was scared. Because when he checked me,
They're not painful?
They were not painful. They were not. My gyna said, okay, Helen, the thing is that your immunity is very low. And you've been having back-to-back infections, there's a possibility they were like, they ran tests. That is a season where they ran HIV tests on me every 2 weeks. Every time I went back for...
Is it this?
Yeah. So, like, that's a season, my gyna, every 2 weeks, every time I went back for antenatal, my gyna would check me for HIV. Every, he told me, Helen, these signs are usually in women, not I. I was like, but I'm not. They tested me. They tested me to the point where I reach whereby I would just do my hand like this. And I said, probably this is, today is the day they find out that I'm actually sick. They tested me every 2 weeks because they figured they were like, maybe I got it alone. You understand? I kind of was scared.
What made you stay? You were still waiting for the light?
I'd grown up with this fantasy of mom, dad, child. That's the fantasy I had. Mm. You know, you grow up, you get married, you stick it out.
So you knew you were there.
So me, I said, you know what? I'm not letting go of my man because of these things. My child needs a dad.
Wow.
Until my guy sat me down. I remember my guy sat me down with another woman who's also a guy who'd always see me. And they told me, Helen, for your own good, your pregnancy is already high risk. This man seems like he's collecting every infection, STI, and bringing it to you. Close your legs. I did. I had to close my legs.
You listened?
I listened. Because the reason why I listened, because by the time they had that conversation with me, I was 7 months pregnant. I was in the house. This man had to come and take me to hospital. He didn't come. I took myself. The following day he came, but he still came at night. And he was talking very arrogantly. It's like, I wish Anne was the one that was pregnant. Oh my God, if Anne was the one that was pregnant right now, she'd be home with my mother being taken care of.
My jaw dropped. Really?
I looked at this man. The man was saying this after I had just had sex with him.
Yeah?
Yeah. And he was saying these things. And I'm like, okay. So when they told me the following week, because I went there, because me every, it was too high risk. I was, every time I'd see something, I'd go to hospital. That's when they told me, and I said, I will listen. And that's the last. When I tell you that I walked with my knees on stones, begging this man to stay with me within that season. When I tell you that I did everything I used to tell myself as a child that I would never do, I did. Because in my head, I just didn't want my child to grow up fatherless. I didn't want to be a statistic. I didn't want to be a single mom. Get? I didn't.
Was it that bad?
I didn't want to fit into this narrative. I felt like I had been cast. Like maybe I've always had these bad manners, and that's why people have been saying I will suffer.
What was so scary about single motherhood?
I was scared because I felt like I was going to be a laughing stock.
Damn.
I had kept myself...
Helen!
I had kept myself in high school. I didn't break my virginity till I was 18. So I had kept myself. So how was I going to tell the world that I kept myself for me to end up in this shit? How was I going to prove to Louisa, my cousin, who had said, you know, I am nothing without them, that, you know, I'm something? I had this need to prove... a point, and if it meant that I stay in something's toxic, I'll stay. Thank God the nigga's not willing to stay.
Thank God, still. What was the narrative around single motherhood? And I'm asking you this question because I've been raised by my mother. Uh-huh. My mother raised me and my brothers single-handedly, and that's because my dad died.
Yeah.
But in the conversations I had, okay, the thing that may have made me silent or what made it obvious that I was less than was joining boarding school and hearing kids
talk about their dads.
Talk about both parents. Mm-hmm. And for a certain period, from P4 to P7, I got silent because I noticed there's a shortage in my life.
Me in that age.
But there was no conversation about single motherhood. And that's why I'm asking, what was being said? Because for me, I don't think I would have thought so much about that.
No, for me, it was, in that age, I had a very imaginative mind between P4 and P7. I knew. I knew that I was being raised by someone that is not my mom.
Right.
I knew the struggles between my mom and dad. They had separated and everything. And I was very imaginative. I wanted so much a perfect, because I didn't grow up in one.
Right.
You understand? Mm. I didn't grow up in a traditional.
You're ready to change your story?
Yes. And I kept on saying, I'm not going to live like this. You understand? I'm not losing my kids. My kids are growing up with me and their dad. I knew that for me, it was one boyfriend and that's it. Like, I get that boyfriend. And of course, that's what you build. You've seen high school movies. You know, they get this boyfriend and the ones they get married to.
Yeah.
And then...
that's all you know.
And of course, I had always been threatened by my mom. Like, if you get pregnant, you go on the streets. And for the other thing is that I just felt like I had suffered enough. I can't tell them even in this umbrella of love I'm suffering. Because when I left home, the only need I had, and I realized my mistake in that, was I needed to be loved, I needed to be validated, I needed to be noticed by someone. Because I felt like I was in a space where I was not being seen. And when I met this man and he was seeing me and he was validating me and he was... losing that meant that I was a loser all over again, and I did not want to be that.
Mm.
Because, and it's something that I always tell people that have grown up in households that are tough, and I'm like, I know it's tough, but don't look for validation outside, it's worse. I didn't even know that that's what I was doing, that I was moving from, after him, I moved from one terrible relationship to another. Like, it's like they just became toxic by the level. I remember there's one guy who came and proposed marriage to me, and he had nothing really, but the guy was toxic. He manipulated me into meeting his parents. Like, before I knew it, like, it was a whole kuchala date that I had not consented about. I had, like, they brought me a ring and just put it on my finger like this. I had ultimatums. And I sat down. I was with my auntie in Kasangati, and she told me, Helen, getting a man that accepts you with your child is not easy. Again, I'm being framed into thinking this is not me settling for less. This is me surviving within the means the Lord has provided. And I remember I took a bold decision and I said, I'm not doing that. And that's where my homelessness began from at 23. My child was one.
This is a lot.
Yes. My child was one. I had just left prison. I had gone through a lot, because between zero to about 1 year with Andreas, I'd gone through a lot, but I'd survived.
Let us talk about the single motherhood.
Yes.
How did you maneuver that? How did it look like for you? Because now I'm asking you this question because this is a Mother's Week.
Yeah.
Let us first explore what motherhood looked like. Because I'm assuming at the time... you deliver, you're already separated with this guy.
Yes. I didn't know anything. I just knew I was carrying a child. I just knew I wasn't sure I loved that child.
Ooh.
I just knew that I was bitter. I was heartbroken. And what the man was doing was not helping the situation. I was hungry most of the time. I remember at about 8 going to 9 months, I had to move from Nadia to Chireka.
Is that on foot?
On foot. And if you know that distance, it's long. And that time they hadn't yet built the Northern Bypass, it was just under construction. So you had to you had to go around. And I remember the reason I was doing that was that the maid that raised me had rented a place in Chireka, and I knew that I could get food there. That is, for me, I sold everything I had worked hard for to just make the child survive. And I remember... I was at school, I had a first class, like the results I had, because I had entered second year, and by first year I was essing it. And I remember going to my faculty register without fees, but I needed to sit. I needed to prove to myself that I can do it. And my faculty register told me, Helen, you are tired. I looked like a ghost, like you'd find, you know, you become ashy. I remember my doctor asked me, choose one, your life or your education and work, choose one. It's like, if you push yourself, you're going to lose the baby, but along the way, you're going to lose your life too. because your baby does not want to be in the stomach either. It's like it feels it's not wanted, because every day I'd be sporting. And I said, okay. And I remember at work, my performance dwindled, so they asked me to resign without having to fire me. And because my supervisor had reported, but my supervisor was unaware that I was pregnant, my HR knew that I was. And that she had put me in a different department so that I can. But the guy thought like, oh, they've removed me for direct sales because I'm poorly performing, without realizing I've been put in retail because I am having a high-risk pregnancy and I can't afford to be moving around. The guy only found out I was pregnant after I was taking back the property. So I exposed the stomach to show. Like, you were pregnant? I'm like, yeah. Why didn't you say? I'm like, I did, but you had your bias. So I left Smile Telecom. So I'm jobless. I have a 200K house to rent. That's when I started selling out my properties, because it's either that or I'm hungry. But the property soon got done. And the maid at the neighborhood, I had never eaten kalo and binyebwa. But that maid would bring me her food. Meanwhile, she was also being tortured by her boss. But she would forfeit that food to bring it to me. Like, I would close myself in the house and cry. And I tell God, am I really a bad person that I deserve this?
Yeah.
And I remember I went to the hospital very casually. The day I gave birth, I went to the hospital very casually to Continental. And they told me, oh, you're giving birth today. I'm like, me? I don't feel any pain. But it's something that I'd asked God for. I told God, please, please. Everything has died. At least let the child, let it be worth it. And I didn't feel pain at all. I tell people I didn't go through that whole normal labor pain for Andreas. I felt labor pains after I put the baby there.
After.
That's when all the pain came. And the doctor said I remember the nurse that was checking me in told me, you look like the heart of this world has made you too strong that you don't even feel your own contractions. Like, Helen, you're contracting, but you don't even feel it. Because the inches are moving. How aren't you? Do you know people at that stage would be shouting? Then there's you walking around like as if I had not told her anything. She told me, you must have a story. And I kept on telling them I'm 20. They kept on saying, no, you're 16. That's how I looked. They're like, we're not going to beat you. It is okay. Just tell us your real age. And I'm like, I'm 20. I was born in 93. They're like, no, don't worry. I'm like, guys, I'm 20. I didn't look 20. I put to bed. The man is not there. I've called him. He has not showed up. He showed up the next day with his new babe, the MP's daughter, in his hand. And they came and sat on my bed. Ronnie, another kid doesn't look like you.
No.
So these things, I remember them and I'm like, but Helen, Choka, you are tough. And I looked at her like this. I remember just telling her, where I am is where you're coming. And by God's grace, I pray, you don't have it worse.
No.
Yeah, and she had told everybody at the campus where the guy was, because we had mutual friends there and some of the friends that I went to school with, how I'm a prostitute and I'm really tying the child on hand. Of course, I knew the man had failed her some of this information. And of course, she was just exaggerating it to anybody who could hear. Ay, Jesus Christ, I remember I got out of the hospital, but I didn't have where to go. I didn't have who's going to nurse me. In that moment, I didn't even think about my own mother, that maybe I should take a bus and go to Kamuringa and just be nursed by my mother. I didn't even count her. I remember calling my friend from high school and saying, Rita, I don't have who to nurse me. I don't even know what to do. And Rita said, come home. I went to her home. They drove me up to her home. And it's the mother that nursed me. She burnt the living daylights out of me. It was some of the things that I have used as a family planning method. Every time I remember the heat of pressing me, I'd be like, I'm not going back to the labor ward. That it was painful. I suffered with postpartum depression, but I didn't know it was postpartum depression. I hated Andreas. Not like hate, but I didn't have any attachment to him. And the problem was that it was a mixture of two things. I didn't like him. Didn't have that attachment to him, but I needed that attachment to be there because I didn't want to be my mother. I don't know that you get me.
I do.
Yeah.
Very well.
I needed to force it.
It's like a state of stagnation.
Yes. I told
myself. They're opposing energies where you want to go away, but then you also want to
stay. there was me saying, I don't want to be like my mom, because I'd promised myself I'd never be my mom. I'll stick it out for all my kids. I don't care how. And then there was me who could spend the whole day without thinking about him, without even feeding an ounce of, like, you know, the things where people panic for their child. Yeah, because from like 0 day, I left him there and I told them, give him glucose. Me, I've gone for a discussion at school. And I had enrolled myself back. Like the lecture, I told me drop. I refused to drop. My friends called me like, Oma, you come. I was like, Oma, I'm coming. But I hadn't paid fees. So I left him there for like 2 hours. And I will tell you that I wasn't at school rushing to run back home. I actually wanted to stay for as long as it takes, even if it's 4 hours. I just didn't want to be near him. And then I had to come back because, again, I didn't want to be that mother. So I'd breastfeed, but I didn't have. And honestly, I didn't even know it was postpartum depression. I just knew me and him. And as it grew, it worsened. I just did my role. Breastfeed, put you down. My son is independent, but it's simply because I actually forced that independence. I didn't even realize I was making him do that. You know, the things where mothers have to really be attached to their kids, that even if they put them down, they cry. No. Me, when I was I was just advised once, breastfeed and put down. I'm like, you don't have to say it again. I'm like, that is what will make them not cry, cry, cry. Eh, it's okay. That's what I did. I didn't have those things of like that. My dad had told me of a story of how the reason why I was so attached to him was because every night I'd sleep on his chest. So I told myself I'll do that for him. And he loved the boobs so much. So I'd like, I'd always put him just there. But I'd always make sure I breastfeed. But I'll never be at work and I call like 10 times and say, oh, how is Andreas? Nothing. And funny thing, I love other people's kids. But then every time in the back of my head, I kept on saying, you do not want to become like your mom. Mm. You are not going to abandon this child. And I remember, again, I'd gone back to the same workplace where my HOD was, the one who took me to therapy. And again, he noticed. And for me, he told me, Helen, just borrow some of the knowledge you had last time. You're dealing with something and I can't touch it. I don't know. I don't know how to diagnose it. So I was like, I just need to be diagnosed regardless. So I take myself to Butabika Hospital. This time, like...
This is
2014.
Wow.
So I took myself to Butabika Hospital because I knew most of the doctors there, some of the nurses that, you know, because I used to go for Rotaract with them. So I just go, because the ones I made my friends, I take myself there. Literally, every time I'd leave work at 5, I'd go there. I knew that on Tuesday I'd meet them. So I would sit and I would just talk. I actually tell people talking for me is therapy.
It is, of course.
For me, it's an escape. So I used to journal a lot. So my friend just told me, continue journaling. Used to journal in high school. Continue, like, just bring it back. And like, the problem about journaling is that people get to know my feelings. They steal my book, then get to know what I'm thinking. They're like, no, you're older and you're alone. Just journal. So I journaled, I vented. And then some young man just told me, sometimes you just need Jesus. Some of these things, only God can answer. But like, I hated God. Felt like He could have protected me from all these things. No, I had not been taught about consequences of, yes, grace is sufficient, but there's consequence to actions. I was like, but God could have saved me from these things. So when I got to prison in 2014, yeah, I got to prison and my boss arrests me for apparently stealing his laptop.
Is this the same person that took you to therapy?
No. So I leave that job because there was a Kenyan man who, because ever since I was hired when I was younger, it just never made sense to him. So he hires some chick that she puts at the reception, but they need to defer my money to her money because she's not accounted for in the system. So they call me in a meeting and tell me, we are going to start work paying you on commission. But they underestimate that I'm really good at sales. The day they put me on commission, I sell 20M. The very day. And I come back and I'm like, I want my commission. They're like, no, you first wait. They haven't yet paid all the money. I'm like, hey, you have to first bring the cash. I brought the first batch of cash. And then instead of paying me, they bring out 90K. But I had papers to do. I had exams to pay for. And I tell this nigga, I counted on this money because I wanted to pay for my thing.
10% of the sales is 2 million. I just need one. It's like, no, by the percentage is not 10, it is 0.1. I'm like, who works for 0.1% on commission? So I walk out and I remember I walked out. I went to the client. I told the client, you give me little money. They need them. They need more money. The client gives me 1.7. I give my HD part of it and I take the rest home. And I told my HOD, if they ever ask you, tell them I paid myself. And I went, but I found my son sick. And that is where my attachment now started, because the panic I got of losing him. I do not know whether I was just scared because I had sacrificed too much, I'd lost too much to have him alive, or it was because I actually loved him as a mother. There was a whole mixture, and people are scared to admit these things, but it's the honest truth. Me, it was, I have lost too much for you to die now. You can't. You just can't.
This is not the time.
You can't do it now. I have lost too much. I can't lose everything for you to also die. I lost everything because of you. And that narrative, oh God, it's terrible for kids, because you put it on them. Without even realizing. I did it to Andreas for a long time, by the way. Then, so I get this job with this lawyer, and then I think within 2-3 months, he arrests me because they stole his laptop, and he says, because apparently he's been underpaying me, that's the reason for me stealing his laptop. I was like, maybe I'm paying up for my sins. They arrest me, but...
And where is the child at this point?
With, I found a new babysitter. A lady had sat me down and told me, there's this lady who knows how to take care of kids. You just have to pay her 30K. I'm like, oh, can do that. So I go to her. She's the one that stays with the kid. That woman, actually, that night when I was in prison, the husband tried throwing her out. Because for him, he just couldn't take strangers' kids. And the man said, me, where do you want me to put the child? The mother is not around. And she left the kid in my responsibility. That's the day I just knew, this is my new mom. If she can do this for me, I came back. She nursed me. She took care of me. She did all the propaganda thing of like, don't enter the house before, you know, when you're coming from prison and everything. And this lady realized within that system that I had no parents. But then my uncles had said, come back home. I go home, and that's my worst, I think, experience. I go home, but I put the things there, and I go to Kasangati to my aunties. It was peaceful there. But my uncles insisted, like, you come home. They put me in this uncle's home, who eats food in front of my child without giving my child anything. And for me, my breaking point within that period was, she came and told me, hey, you think I don't know you come and eat our leftovers when we leave and when we sleep? But this man will read the Bible day and night. So for me, the breaking point was, Andreas sat and watched them eat. He was so hungry. He was just one. Came to the bedroom and said, mommy, me eating too. Mommy, chapat. Out of frustration, I slapped my child. I tried first saying, it's okay, we're going to eat tomorrow. But being a child, he goes and sits and looks at them. There's a way I came pulling his ears. But he was one. Nobody should give birth when they are young without a support system. I came, and then she was like, no, for you, why are you beating that child? Is it his fault that you cannot fend for him? Like, hey, so the maid, throw all that stuff into the rubbish. This one thinks I don't know that she eats our leftovers. Yeah.
You are not even worthy of leftovers.
The next day, because Andreas was so hungry, I was coming from the center, but to buy what? The maid had given us money, her maid. I found Andreas eating out of the dustbin. I never cried so much like I cried that day. And I told God, what do I do? What do I do? I couldn't beat my child. I had beaten him the previous day and even cried myself to sleep, regretting why I had beaten him. It was not his fault that he was born to a poor mom. And he was eating out of the dustbin. Not just like, you know, these were nice plastic bins. Now I'm talking about a blackened kadeya, like sack. And when he saw me, he got so terrified because he knew what he was doing was wrong. And I'm like, my child shouldn't be growing up at this age. For Christ's sake, no. I packed him, went back to Kasangati. But my auntie there was a believer in God a lot. So I was like, let me consider what my friend told me, you know, seek God a bit. I sought God. I cried to God. I prayed to God. But then my auntie became funny. She wanted me to get married to the man that had come to marry me. And of course, she was telling me again to settle for less. And I said, you know what? I'm not doing this. So to force me into the marriage, she tells me, get out of my house. She didn't just mean like, leave, never come back. It was more like, if I chase you away,
you will go to the
you
guy.
You have nowhere else to go but to his place. Helen. I prostituted myself that night. Yeah? That very night. I was like, better this than go to that man's house. That very night, there was a nigger in my inbox. I told him, where do you stay? And it's not like exchange for money. It was exchange for a roof over my head. That's all. Because I picked my son up, took him to the lady that the babysitter, told her the truth. And I told her, I don't have money. I don't have this. But she's like, let me bring. And she had already suggested it. It's like, Helen, if life is overwhelming, bring me that child. Me, I'm willing to fight with my husband. I love your son. I carried the child, put him there. Because when those crabs started at home. That night, when my I just went, I called him like, where are you? I'm like, the only price to pay is sex. It's okay. I've gone through worse already. And I remember the entire time, I was just there like a log. Like a total log with only tears going through my eyes. I just kept on saying, God, really me? Me? Me, God, I'm doing this? I think I started dying within. I went to the auntie of mine in Mokono, but I didn't tell them what was going on. So, of course, they thought I was working and everything. So, their demands, I just disappeared. I called this, my former HOD, now he had entered politics. And I told him, hey, I need a place to stay. What? He's like, no, actually, come, I give you money because you helped me on my campaign. He gives me 300K. I tell him, add me 50K. I needed, like, the house is like 120. I got the house. No bed, no nothing. There's a guy who liked me. And I'm like, yeah, Lord, no, I'm not doing this. I'll sleep on the floor. So I went back to my auntie where we had escaped with Andreas, and I picked some of the stuff only for me to come back, and she had thrown all my suitcases up on the roof, and every Andreas's cloth was destroyed. Everything. And I mean everything. She had thrown all my property that had come, and they're the ones who forced me to leave my house and said, come back home, right? Only for me to find them up on the roof, rotten.
The one who threw away the food?
Yes. My uncle is around that day, and I look at the things like this. I look at him. I look at my things and just walk away. He comes after me. He's like, Helen, I didn't know. I'm like, it's okay. So the next day, I come back for my academic documents. I'm like, somehow they must be around. So my uncle tells me, why didn't you tell me that this was? And I'm like, I tell you what happens. Do you leave her? Now she become less of your wife. Don't you know her behavior? So the wife comes and like, so you're reporting me, and he does what? You're the one who's nothing. You're the one who went and gave birth to her. Like she insulted me. Told her, I do not know what I have done to warrant your insult. The man was just asking me why I didn't tell him. What did you want me to tell him? That she was starving us. That the reason why we left was because my kid was picking out food from the uncle's, just there looking at me and saying, I didn't know. And I'm like, and if you had known, what would have happened? You'd come back here on the weekend, and on the weekend, the day you're around, that is when we eat. He's like, wait, what? And I'm like, and we eat because we cooked. And of course, because we cooked, we're the last ones to eat. But it's better than nothing. So I walked. Remember my first boyfriend, the bestie transition to the thingy? He brings me a mattress. He brings everything. He's like,
bestie transitioning into boyfriend, wasn't he the dad?
No. It was the one I called him, but the one I called Butterflies. His name is Ronnie.
Oh, yes. I thought he was the one who...
No. He would never. The other one was an angel. So he brings me a mattress. He brings me everything. He's like, Helen, I know it didn't work out between us, but I could never leave you hanging. You're the girl that stood by me through it all. Like, ah, thanks. So I start from there.
Part 2 is coming up in a few hours from now. Be sure that your notification is turned on. And before I sign out, allow me to thank you for hanging out with us to the last minute of this part. If you loved this episode, do me a favor and hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Castbox, Podbean, or any podcast platform of your choice. It is by the power of our community that we shall make this podcast grow. Also, feel free to share your insights about what connected with you on YouTube. Do it in the comment section. On social media, be sure to tag us. We are at hashtag #WeNavGuzichuanKo on Facebook and Instagram. And on X, our handle is at HTNK Podcast. see you in part 2.